This is Jerry Krantman of American Dream Radio. The elections came. Early indications were that John Kerry might be on the road to victory, so much so that Karen Hughes, a close advisor to Mr. Bush, reportedly sat him down and prepared him for the worst. But somehow, against the odds, the numbers changed. Later, these early results, taken from exit polls, which are usually extremely accurate, were written off as being, quote, bad polling practices, unquote. Then we waited and wondered whether Kerry would insist that the provisional ballots be counted before he would concede, but by morning it was all over. Kerry had conceded. The 2004 elections had ended without incident. George Bush is to serve a second term as President of the United States. The Democrats have lost seats in Congress. The Supreme Court's Chief Justice Rehnquist is battling a serious cancer. And it's likely that Bush will appoint several justices this term. Looks like a long, easy glide for the GOP as they change even more about what many of us have always thought America was about. That was the story. There were many theories for what happened. Values voting, gay marriage, Kerry's nuance didn't play to NASCAR dads. No presidents lately have come from the Northeast since John Kennedy. Lots of reasons were given. But whatever the reason to most Americans, the 2004 elections seem settled and over now. There are quite a few people, though, who are still asking questions about this year's election results. Today we're fortunate to be speaking with Tom Hartman about the recent 2004 presidential elections. Tom Hartman, Tom at tomhartman.com, is a recipient of a 2004 Project Censored Award. He's a best-selling author and host of a nationally syndicated daily progressive talk show, which can be found at www.tomhartman.com. Tom recently published an article on commondreams.org called Evidence Mounts That the Vote May Have Been Hacked. You can find the article on commondreams.org. His most recent books are The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, Unequal Protection, The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights, and What Would Jefferson Do? A Return to Democracy. This 42-minute interview was recorded on November 15th, 2004. You're listening to American Dream Radio. Today we're fortunate to be speaking with Tom Hartman about the recent 2004 presidential elections. Welcome, Tom. And what do you think? Is this election all settled now?
Well, it's hard to say. It's really hard to say. I mean, you know, Ralph Nader is trying to get New Hampshire recounted. David Cobb looks like he's pretty much there with the money or close to it to recount Ohio. More and more horrors are coming to light. The statistical anomalies, like Kathy Dopp pointed out in Florida, are even more remarkable in North Carolina, and there's a bunch of people who are digging into those. There's a lot of open questions at this point.
And people are now looking into them. Is that...
It seems like... the blogosphere is full of it.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, and very little of it has made its way into the mainstream media. And, in fact, there's even... You know, people like James Galbraith of The Nation writing attack pieces against, well, like specifically against me by name, oddly, although I didn't come up with the numbers, and against people like Kathy Dopp, who compiled the original numbers, saying essentially, you know, don't worry, be happy. I'm not that easily appeased, frankly. I think that the burden of proof should not be on us to prove that these guys did hack a particular election. Mm-hmm. Instead, it should be the other way around. We should have a system that is so transparent that there is no doubt that no election was hacked. I mean, it's just absurd to be saying, "Oh, prove that this was done in this little black box that you can't look into."
Right.
Instead, we shouldn't have black boxes.
Well, I was surprised to see the people who run the industry things and the people from the counties that are buying the machines arguing against paper trails.
Well, not just them. I mean, the Republican Party. Rush Holt and Bob Graham and Hillary Clinton introduced legislation into the House and the Senate 2 years ago requiring paper trails. And Tom DeLay, Denny Hastert, and Bill Frist have prevented these things from coming to the floor for a vote.
So I wonder how it is that people don't look at that and get upset. I mean, everything that Diebold makes has a paper trail, except voting machines, as I understand it. You know, their ATM machines wouldn't function without a paper trail. Every kind of little electronic money device they make, they know they need a paper trail. And yet, with officials arguing against paper trails now, people still are sitting in their living rooms watching sports. What's going on that the American people are so complacent about what's happening to their election system?
You know, it's a tough question. I think there are multiple factors at play here. Number one, there's the unfortunate reality that has been the reality for the better part of probably 50 years or so, that Americans tend only to get political around election time. Mm-hmm. It's sort of like, you know, some sports fans only get interested in sports during the Super Bowl. And then it becomes a my team, your team kind of thing. There's not even a good, solid discussion about, you know, the foundational principles involved and all those kinds of things. So that's part of it. I think the election's over, and so people are back to, you know, trying to make a living and tending to their family and seeing who's going to win the next, you know, basketball game. I think perhaps a larger part of it is the absolutely natural tendency that human beings have to not want to confront problems in their midst. It's the enabling, basically, the alcoholic family syndrome, mm-hmm. or the incestuous family syndrome, or whatever, where, you know, nobody really wants to talk about it. And nobody really wants to even contemplate it.
I mean, well, once you start to acknowledge it, then a whole lot of other things follow, and you don't.
That's right, and then the whole order of things gets upset, and in many cases, I mean, the reality is that the disequilibrium that comes out of it, at least in family dynamics, in some cases, is worse than the original problem. You know, families very often end up breaking up as a result of, you know, well-intentioned therapists coming in trying to solve, you know, these kinds of problems. And I think that there are, you know, there's an instinctive knowledge of that, and so there's a lot of people who, you know, don't even want to imagine that there might be voter fraud, and if there is, figure, well, you know, we'll let those professionals in the smoke-filled rooms take care of it, or you know, like was said during the 60 election when the Republicans were claiming that Kennedy had stolen the election by having Mayor Daley rig voting machines in Chicago, and of course that's never been documented. What has been documented is that organized crime in Florida, Santos Traficante, rigged that vote for Richard Nixon. You know?
Uh-huh.
But the argument was made that, well, one cancels out the other, what the heck, you know, that kind of thing. And so, you know, there's a lot of reasons, I think, why people just don't want to go there with this.
Well, in light of that, I've seen that the Washington Post has come out and said that, it's all a mistake about all this voting fraud stuff. It's, you know, if it happened, it didn't happen, so it would have affected the actual outcome. People seem to be kind of falling into exactly what you're talking about, which is that they don't really want to think about it or talk about it.
Yeah.
In light of that, I'm wondering if you might be able to tell something of the story that we're in now, which, you know, there's nothing for certain at this point, but there's certainly seem to be a lot of warning flags going up everywhere I'm looking.
Yeah. Well, there's really two kind of levels of issue. One is the one that I initially raised in my op-ed piece on Common Dreams, which was, is there electronic voting fraud? Has the vote been hacked? And I'm to this day convinced that the vote was hacked in the state of Georgia in the 2002 election, I believe it was, when Max Cleland lost his seat.
Mm-hmm.
And because all the polls showed that Erskine Bowles was, not Erskine Bowles, forgetting his opponent's name now, but anyhow, that his opponent was losing, and by about the same proportion as his opponent ultimately won. And so, you know, there's this question of, was the vote hacked electronically? And then there's the other issue, which is the one that Greg Palast brings up so eloquently, which is, was the vote stolen using old-fashioned methods? For example, we know that people in Ohio, registered Democrats in Ohio, were getting telephone calls the week before the election telling them that their polling place had changed. And so they show up at a different polling place, and lo and behold, they're not on the list. So either they go away or they're given a provisional ballot, and the provisional ballots, of course, are more likely not to be counted because it's a whole other hurdle now. You know, the Secretary of State says if you forgot to put your birthday on it, then we don't have to count it. You know, and they're looking for all these excuses not to count the provisional ballots. And they may be overwhelmingly Democratic if really a lot of those kind of phone calls were made and people took them seriously. So, and then there's the even older, old-fashioned stuff that goes back to the, you know, the segregation days, particularly in the South, stuff that was mostly done, ironically, by the Democratic Party 50 years ago, 60 years ago, of making it harder for blacks to vote or minorities to vote in general or poor people to vote by giving them older machines, by having fewer machines, you have longer lines, you know, the people have to get back to work, they can't stand in line for 6 hours. Just, you know, structural stuff that that can be set up in a way that if you've got a white Republican suburb that you know is going to vote heavily toward Bush, you give them lots of machines and make sure that they work in tip-top shape. And if you've got a heavily Democratic urban area that you know is going to largely vote for Kerry, you give them a small number of rickety, broken-down machines, and voila, you've changed the vote.
Right. Well, I think I had read that in some places in Ohio that they had cut the number of machines in half from the election they had a couple of months ago. So that they had enough for people to vote, but that strangely that seemed to happen in Democratic precincts.
Yeah, and Greg Palast has done a good job of documenting this. The problem is it makes for dry reading. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, it's you go through a list of, you know, here's the 37 outrages, you know, and here in this county this was done, and in this city this was done, in this precinct this was done, and you can't, you know, tie it all up in one little, you know, put it all in one little box and put a bow around it and a ribbon and put a single label on it, like, you know, here's the crime, you know, this guy was responsible for it. There's not a you know, it's not quite as neat as the vote theft in Florida, where Catherine Harris actually purged some 60,000 to 80,000 African Americans from the voter list before the election was held, who should not have been purged and who therefore could not vote, and thus throwing the vote to George W. Bush. I mean, had she not done that, Al Gore would have clearly won Florida. And so there was that one event in Florida that everybody could point to. In Ohio, it's looking like it's literally hundreds, maybe thousands of little events combined with these, you know, confuse the Democrats stuff of people being told that they're not registered to vote, or there's a problem with the registration, or they should show up at a different precinct, and that sort of thing. And then on top of that, you've got the old dirty politics stuff of, you know, for example, in some of the, in South Carolina, you know, flyers being put on people's cars at churches on Sunday mornings telling them that the Democrats intend to ban the Bible and immediately establish homosexual marriage and the teaching of homosexuality in the schools. And, of course, you know, it creates panic in these people.
Yes, of course. Well, so, it seems like it was pretty elegantly designed.
Not true.
right.
I should add.
It seemed like it was pretty elegantly designed to get just that reaction, to get certain people out to the polls.
And it did. It did.
Because nobody was talking about gay marriage, and then all of a sudden, San Francisco obligingly started marrying people.
Well, the Supreme Court of Massachusetts was the one that kicked the whole thing off, and that was an unfortunate irony. That's where John Kerry came from, you know. I mean, it was like the Republicans had been handed a gift.
Well, I think it was a gift of their own making.
To some extent. I don't think that the Supreme Court is partisan in Massachusetts. I don't think it had anything to do with party politics. They were simply, you know, litigating a case that came before. I mean, they were simply deciding a case that had been litigated in Massachusetts that came before them in that session.
So it seems like there's a lot of progressives, a lot of people out here on the net, on the blogs, who are talking about what happened, but it doesn't seem like the Democrats are among the people that are talking about what happened. You think that's because of their involvement in whatever vote tampering they may be doing other places? No,
I think by and large, mainstream Democrats and the Democratic Party and the Kerry campaign in particular think that unless some investigative reporter or some net person can find proof of fraud and really nail it, unless that happens, or until that happens, that for them to stick their heads up and make allegations would just cause them to get shouted down and called a sore loser. And I mean, it would be political suicide. So it's better for them to wait and let other people do the work. And then if somebody finds the smoking gun, then they can step forward and say, okay, here's how we remedy this.
Well, like you're saying, in Ohio, there may be hundreds of smoking guns. All of them are so small that nobody will admit to them having really made a difference.
Right, but a statewide recount may bring those to light, and that's what David Cobb and Michael Badnarik are doing right now.
Now, this has to be achieved before the vote is certified?
I believe so. I don't frankly know all the details and intricacies of the Ohio recount, and so, would encourage you to talk to the Cobb campaign about that. It's something I just don't have the whole scoop on.
Understand. Now, one of the things that's driving this sense that things are amiss here, I assume, has to do with exit polling.
Yeah.
Can you maybe say a little bit about what exit polling is?
Polling that's done before an election, you call people and you ask them questions designed to determine whether or not they are likely to vote, whether they voted in the past, who they're likely to vote for, those kinds of things. And the main thing is to try to figure out, are they actually going to show up at the polls? And part of that is based on, on whether they say that they intend to, and part of it is based on their past behavior. But the problem with pre-polling is that, people will tell you anything. You just don't know. Sometimes they'll tell you what they think you want to hear. Sometimes they don't want to admit that they don't intend to vote. They want to sound patriotic, et cetera, et cetera. And sometimes they, haven't made up their minds. Exit polls, on the other hand, filter all that out. Because you're asking, every third person who walks out of the precinct, for example, for whom they voted and what they voted, how they voted, you know that 100% of your sample are people who actually voted. Mm-hmm. And assuming that they tell you the truth, and by and large in exit polls people do, history shows, you're getting a good, clean sample and good, clear information about what really went on and, who voted for whom.
How about the people who take the polls? Do they tell the truth?
Well, that's a whole other issue, but I think that there's an assumption of accuracy. I mean, their reputation depends upon their accuracy, and that's part of the problem. Is that prior to electronic voting machines, exit polls were almost always accurate in the United States. I mean, when Walter Cronkite back in the 1960s used to call an election, he would call an election, hours before the states were done counting the ballots. People would be counting ballots, for days when ballots were hand done, in the 40s, the 50s in particular. And yet the news media would call an election the evening of the election. Well, they did that based on exit polls. And exit polls just generally are never wrong. And so here we have a situation where the exit polls all showed Kerry winning by a landslide. And to the point that Karen Hughes sat George Bush down and informed him that he had lost the election. And yet the electronic voting machines say, no, George won. And this has a lot of people scratching their heads. And, so now they're trying to go through all these elaborate explanations of how the exit polls were flawed. Frankly, there's a lot of people who are saying, we're not going to buy that. Sorry. We would like to see an audit of this election.
Yes.
And so, you know, Bev Harris at Black Box Voting has funded an actual audit, and they're actually looking at this thing.
Huh. Where are they doing the audit? I know she's working in Florida now. I don't know.
She lives in Seattle, I think she's trying to do it nationwide.
Really?
Yeah, she just filed the largest Freedom of Information Act filing in the history of the United States. And
what is she picking up now? Or what is she getting with Freedom of Information Act?
Say that again?
What did she request?
She's trying to get the actual logs of the computers at the precinct level.
Oh. At the precinct level.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I saw the demonstration that she did about hacking the vote. It was pretty impressive, actually, where she showed how you can just click. In fact, you wrote about it in your article, where she was able to just change the results of an election very simply.
Yeah.
I mean, it didn't require any real hacking skills, it looked like.
Yeah. No, it doesn't, actually. If you know how to cut and paste on a database, if you've ever used a database program for even 5 minutes, you know how to hack an election. it's that simple. And you know how to double-click on my computer and then double-click on Drive C and then double-click on, you know, I mean, it's really, there's a guy who's created a website that just walks you through it, and he's got actual pictures, screenshots.
Jeez. Yeah, well, your article said that on TV, she had just double-clicked on the file that held the results, and then
and it
came
up
like an Excel spreadsheet.
It brings it up as a database, and you cut and paste your cells, and, you know, end of discussion. It's very simple.
And nothing more than that has been required of these voting machines? I mean, there are ways of making databases much more secure than that.
But it's not, to the best of my knowledge, it's not been done with any of these systems.
About 20 minutes remaining in this 42-minute interview with Tom Hartman. You're listening to American Dream Radio. So is there a certifying body that might have done this and didn't?
Well, the Congress, the Help America Vote Act, mandated the creation of a certifying body for voting machines and voting machine software. And it was only recently brought into being. Most of the machines, according to Bev Harris, again, she's the expert on this, I haven't drilled down deeply enough to be able to authoritatively speak about these issues, and so I would encourage you to have her on your program.
Yes.
But my understanding...
Yeah, we're actually working on that now.
Yeah, good, because she's good, and she knows this stuff inside out.
Mm-hmm.
But my understanding, based on talking with Bev, is that, and not just Bev Harris, Lynn Landis is also very good with this, and Maria Mercury, is that this agency, that most of the machines that are out there are actually certified to standards going back to the early 90s. And Crane's Business Detroit did an article on Thursday of last week, I think it was, in which they pointed out that the state of Ohio, oddly enough, had commissioned a study of the four major voting machines and found that all of them failed the test, as it were. And their test was simply to set the voting machine up as if it was a voting machine and have a guy walk around it and see if he could break into it, you know, in a way that could be done during an election and would not be detectable.
Oh.
And they found out that it could be done.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
And yet they still use those machines.
Well, they didn't, actually. The state of Ohio chose not to use those machines based on that study. They went back to punch cards.
Oh, okay.
For much of the state, most of the state of Ohio.
Okay. Now, with
to their credit.
With it being so easy to hack election results, is there much of a possibility of fraud even being provable in this election?
Well, that's what Bev is hoping to find. She's already found a couple of instances where the computer logs have apparently been modified. If you know how to get into the guts of an operating system of a computer, you can tell when a file has been accessed.
Mm-hmm.
And if these database files have been accessed at inappropriate times, that doesn't prove that the numbers have been changed, but it mm-hmm. proves that somebody's been messing with them.
Okay.
And so that's what she's trying to nail down.
Interesting.
So we'll see.
So at this point, we're kind of in a wait-and-see mode.
Yeah.
you're saying that we're not really sure if we can pursue this very well. Well, we may be able to pursue it after the vote's been certified, I guess.
Right.
But again, all of that stuff is still up in the air. Is this just too hot for the mainstream news media to touch, or do they not want
to? I think so, yeah, because at this moment, it's in the realm of speculation, and news media generally don't publish speculation. They will publish people talking about speculation.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, Ralph Nader goes on TV and says, "We think the vote was hacked here in New Hampshire. We're going to do a recount." Well, that made the mainstream news.
Uh-huh.
But you're not going to hear Dan Rather say, "There's talk that the vote was hacked." Hmm. I mean, it's the kind of thing Fox News does on the other side. I mean, they wouldn't talk
true.
About the vote being hacked, but they,
yes.
you know, one of their favorite expressions is "people say," right? And then they uh-huh. and then they plug in their Republican talking points. But that's
well,
not
actually
something
the word that I always hear is the word "some." They always say "some people say."
That's right. Some people
yeah.
say.
Yeah, yeah, that could be two people, but
yeah,
you know,
that's
some
right.
do.
Yeah, yeah. And in fact, the "some person" saying it is that person who's saying it right there on Fox News. But you know, if you saw the movie Outfoxed, you know all about
uh-huh.
that. But that's not something that's done by mainstream news media in general. And you know, to some extent, actually, you know, the mainstream news media has a big investment in keeping things stable and steady and secure and safe. I mean, there's
mm-hmm.
you know, the New York Times came out Friday with a piece on the front page, actually, about, you know, all the paranoid conspiracy theories on the blogosphere.
Mm-hmm.
They referenced my article.
Okay,
in their first sentence.
Well, congratulations.
Well, they didn't mention my name. So.
Oh.
Yeah, what can you say? But you know, I'm not sure if that's a blessing or a curse.
Well, I know you're a history buff too, and I just wonder: is this the first time that something like this has come up, or have
no,
there been other?
People have questioned the integrity of elections virtually as long as we've had elections.
I see.
They were probably questioning the integrity of elections in Greece. 3,000 years ago. No, this is not new. It's just that technology has allowed it to be potentially carried to a whole new level that may be startling and shocking.
Mm-hmm.
And that may not be there. I mean, the reality
right.
is it may be that these corporations, even though they're run by Republicans, and, you know, Wally O'Dell, the president of Diebold, says he's going to carry Ohio for George Bush and all this kind of stuff, that he really is just a Republican in his spare time, and that he really runs a reputable voting machine company, and that they really did count the vote accurately. I mean,
mm-hmm.
it's entirely possible.
Mm-hmm.
The problem isn't, you know, in my mind, the problem isn't did they hack the vote or not. The problem is, or the issue is, why do we have a system where we have to ask that question? We should have a system where nobody could be asking that question. We should, you know, if we're going to use computers, they should be owned by the state governments. They should be operated by bureaucrats who are nonpartisan and who are overseen by partisans who are, you know, keeping their eagle eye out. The software should be open source software.
Yeah, absolutely.
And there should be a clear paper trail that can be used for auditing, and there should be a random audits.
Mm-hmm. Well, given the lack of security that's been found by experts looking at these programs, you would think that that having open source would be a much more sensible way to go here, where
yeah.
people can look for bugs and suggest corrections to some of the flaws so that it gets... I mean, it surprises me that the companies hold the source code for these programs so closely... because of it being proprietary trade secrets, something about the idea of voting machine software being a proprietary trade secret strikes me funny. I mean,
mm-hmm.
you know, you'd think...
And a lot of other people as well.
Yeah, you'd think that people would want a great deal of transparency around this.
Yeah. And right now, the party that is not in power would like transparency, and the party in power doesn't want transparency, which just fuels the flames of the paranoids.
Uh-huh.
And I don't mean clinically paranoid. I mean, let's say the concerned.
Yes.
And you know, it may well be that it would be the same case if the tables were turned. Who knows? I frankly doubt it. But you know, it certainly was the case in the 40s, 1950s. You know, when the Democrats were the in the South were the party that were corrupting political processes. In segregated areas to try and perpetuate white power in areas that had growing black population.
Well, then I hear some of the same things about Chicago and how they keep voters from the polls too. And you know,
well, that was more the corruption of Mayor Daley and New York back in the, I think it was the 20s, Tammany Hall. I don't remember, you know, when that era was. It was either the late 1800s or the early 1900s. That was more machine politics. That was more, the political bosses will make sure that you get what you want if you make sure that you turn out the vote for them. And maybe you vote for your dead nephew as well or uncle as well, you know. But it wasn't the kind of one party rule kind of thing. I mean, it was on a local basis, but not on a national basis, not like what we're seeing now. Nobody ever accused Roosevelt of trying to rig the vote. Although he openly tried to, and not just tried to, did pack the Supreme Court. But the vote is a whole different thing. It's the last person to seriously, in a major nation, promote the idea that only one party should have power forever and ever. There, it's okay to have opposition parties, but only one party has real power. It was Joe Stalin. It concerns me that we're seeing an almost Stalinistic worldview or perspective being promoted by the Republicans right now. In as much as they're saying, companies affiliated with us are going to count the vote in secret, and we will tell you who won and who lost. And we're going to fight any attempts to make this transparent. And now, here last week, Ed Gillespie, the former Enron lobbyist and now RNC chairman, has come out and said, let's end these exit polls. And I'm sure Joe Stalin is smiling. And I'm concerned.
Well, considering that there now appears to be no firewall between the corporate interests of the owners of our news media and the journalistic standards that they purport to follow that would serve an informed democracy, I know I've sort of asked this already, but can we expect to see much coverage of these election questions on TV news? Will CNN find any time at all to cover it, even in the wee hours of the morning?
Keith Olbermann has been doing a good job on MSNBC. I think, frankly, that it's going to be the extent to which it is covered will be a function of the extent to which people are unable to unearth smoking guns. That's really the bottom line. The cry of the mainstream media, legitimately so, is prove it to me.
Yes. Yeah, well, electronic stuff has a way of being able to disappear or change with leaving very little trace of what happened.
There you go.
So I wonder what we're going to see. And remembering how much time it took for Watergate to unfold, I sincerely doubt that anything like that's going to happen before the certification of this election.
Yeah. Well, time will tell. My guess, frankly, you know, between you, me, and your listeners, is that we're not going to see any changes in this election as a consequence of all the efforts that are going on right now. But we may identify enough areas of problem or be it criminal or just good old-fashioned generic screw-up, that the election in 2006 will be a lot cleaner and a lot harder to corrupt. You know, that's my hope.
Well, I hope that, you know, that would be mine as well. With what's going on here, it seems to me that it's with the merging again of the corporate interests with the news interests, that I just have to wonder how much unimpeded access is going to be given to corporations through this new administration and through the way the elections are even being covered, as far as selling off, giving away the commons to corporations. It seems to me like this is, once we have this in place where we can sort of run the vote any way we want, that we can pretty much do whatever we want in terms of giving national treasures away to large corporations.
Yeah, well, they're doing that right now.
Oh yeah.
don't want to you know frighten you or startle you. But,
you know, I know that's not
way.
New. Yeah. Whoa. We've kind of covered the ground of.
Yeah, I think the bottom election. Line at this point is that we need to, number one, encourage people to support those people who are the activists leading this charge, and that's you know Bev Harris with Black Box Voting, blackboxvoting.org, David Cobb at votecobb.org, the Common Cause, commoncause.org. You know, the folks who are out there who are beating the bushes, looking for the voting irregularities, trying to determine if there actually is a problem, and if there is, bring it to light. They really need our support.
Yeah.
And we need to be, and, you know, let us not become discouraged about all this. I mean, this is just one election.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, life goes on, and we also need to get back to the very real and important work of crafting a progressive message to help reach that part of America that has become convinced that the greatest threat to American democracy is men marrying each other, and help them remember that there are things like whether or not they're going to have a job, whether or not they're going to have a pension, whether or not they're going to die of the same diseases that their grandparents died of, you know, whether or not they're going to be able to put their kids through school, whether or not their food is safe, whether or not their air is breathable, that these are real issues that are frankly going to impact their lives a whole lot more than whether the two guys down the street decide to get married or not.
Well, it seems, you know, and I've been talking about this for some time, that I think we're going to have to step into some kind of a national crisis before people are going to really take that seriously. It seems that that's the pattern for doing things in this country. But
don't you think we're in a national crisis right now?
Yes, I do, but I don't think that
apparently
anybody's...
it's not bad enough.
Exactly. No one's turned off the football yet.
I think it is. I think it's there, and it's bad enough. And what's going on is that nobody's talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Great Depression. You know, what's his name? Herbert Hoover tried to dance his way through it. You know, his the theme for his campaign was prosperity is just around the corner. That was his slogan. And you know, they were very aggressively trying to promote the idea that this is no big deal. We'll make it through. And you know, there are more people, for example, last year, declared bankruptcy, more human beings, than in the history of the United States, than even during the depths of the Great Depression.
Wow.
Half of them declared bankruptcy because they couldn't afford to pay their health insurance problem. You know, somebody got sick.
Mm.
This is, you know, you have 40%, a minimum of 40% of the American workforce underemployed. More than 40 million people without health insurance. There is a real crisis.
Yes.
The problem is that there are very few voices talking about it. I mean, you know, Lou Dobbs a little bit on CNN maybe once in a while mentions these things. But in the mainstream media, mostly it's, oh, General Electric stock went up another 30 cents today.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, they report the news that's of interest to those people who make their living sitting on their butts by the swimming pool waiting for the dividend check to arrive.
Yes.
They're not reporting labor news. They're not reporting, you know, what's going on with working people like they used to, like they did when I was a kid growing
right.
up in the 50s and 60s.
Right. Well, it seems to me that it used to be more of that, too. And now they've fallen silent around those issues.
Yeah. And that I think speaks to the problem of the corporatization of our news. I mean,
well, and meanwhile, I hear economists, I hear people like Robert Poland, Paul Krugman, telling us that we're fixing to become a country like Brazil or like Argentina, and you know, and that we're headed that way, and that they don't know if it could be staved off even at this point, but certainly if we keep going and keep doing tax cuts and keep privatizing things, that we're going to that's where we're on the fast track, right in that direction. And yet, I mean, that seems to me to be the odd thing, is that I've heard several people say, and I sort of see what they mean, that the media does cover a lot of things to some small extent, and the question in part may be whether the American people are willing to listen to the bad news. It seems like people don't want to tune in for any bad news unless it involves scandal and sex things, you know.
Yeah. Well, maybe we need to find somebody who hacked a voting machine because they slept with the person who was in charge of the voting machine, you know. We can figure out a way to get sex into this thing.
Yeah, well, that may be just what's needed. Well, I really appreciate you taking the time to come on.
Well, thank you. It's been a pleasure being here. And hopefully people will continue their activism and their energy and enthusiasm and carry these things forward.
Well, thank you so much for being with us, Tom.
Sure.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman being interviewed about the 2004 elections by me. I'm Jerry Krantman of American Dream Radio. David Cobb and the Green Party have now successfully raised enough money to get a recount of the vote in Ohio. Tom Hartman, who is Tom at tomhartman.com, is a recipient of a 2004 Project Censored Award. He's a best-selling author and host of a nationally syndicated daily progressive talk show, which can be found at www.tomhartman.com, spelled TOMHARTMANN.com. You can read Tom Hartman's recently published article called Evidence Mounts That the Vote May Have Been Hacked at commondreams.org. You're listening to American Dream Radio. We're on the web at americandreamradio.org.